This NEB FX podcast is brought to you by GenArts, creators of Sapphire Plugins, the essential VFX toolkit for digital artists. Visit www.genarts.com to learn about the latest release for Apple's FX Plug products.
Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX podcast from fxguide.com.
Okay. Welcome to this week's FX podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Seymour, and I'm joined.
We're recording.
We are recording, sir.
John Montgomery is here.
Jeff Huser.
Mark Christensen, I just joined the Snaps Club, or the Mike Seymour Snaps Club.
Okay, thank you. So what we are doing is our regular every year roundtable where we discuss all the cool things that we saw at NAB. And to make us look, or rather should say sound good, we have a bunch of people which are in the room listening. So we have a live audience.
We do one podcast a year with a live audience.
This is our one dig moment where we're going to try and go through some cool stuff. And so they're Twittering this. So if you are listening on Twitter, hang on, that's wrong, isn't it? That's self-referential. Okay, forget that.
Happened hours ago.
Not that we've started drinking or anything. Can you take over?
Yeah. Basically, we're here at Bar Camp FX PhD. It's an event where members of FX PhD come, and it's great because we talk about things we've seen in the show. And so we'll be sharing their comments throughout the podcast this week. But where should we start today? I think we should start where we started today.
I think we should start where we started before the show even opened, down on the floor for the red. Because quite frankly, I actually, you know, obviously I'm quite well known for being a red supporter, but I couldn't say that they disappointed today.
No, not at all. Big announcements in their booth. And it was fun. We split up. There were kind of two possible areas that we could join and see what was going on. There's a theater presentation and checking out the show floor. And I was fortunate enough to actually draw the show floor straw in this case.
In fairness, right, I drew the gym personal presentation in the theater, right?
Which would have seemed like a good idea
to have gone and taken that option, right?
It was fantastic. But meanwhile, on the show floor, I was able to start Twittering.
I'm sorry, I'm just agreeing with you. Like, I'm watching the 4K projection in this private booth off the back with an audience hosted by Jim, the first one in the morning, and meanwhile you are getting all the really cool stuff.
Yeah, Twittering things like 3K for 3K.
Trouble with this, right, is I knew that's what you were doing, so my pocket is vibrating, and I just desperately want to rip out my iPhone to find out what the news is, because clearly the stuff I'm looking at is Red One. I've fucking seen Red One. I know what it looks like. I don't need to sit here and watch this. I want to find out what's going on with Scarlet and this other stuff, which I knew you were doing, right? And I just looked at Jim, and I thought, if I pull out my iPhone and start answering emails instead of watching his presentation on the first morning, he's just going to punch me.
Yeah, exactly. But some cool stuff. Why don't you go over?
Because I just watched Red One footage.
So more than just Scarlet?
Yeah, exactly. It's more than just Scarlet. Epic, a new 5K Red camera, which is actually smaller than the original Red One, which I found interesting. But the tech specs on it actually are markedly improved, I think. You're actually more informed on that than I am.
To be serious for a second, the really interesting thing about the Red One is obviously the sensor data is what's captured and compressed. So you haven't got an image that's being compressed, you've got the sensor data. As a result, you get incredibly good compression. So 4K goes down to about 36 megabytes a second, which means that you can put it on all sorts of things, and isn't that cool? Here's the thing. The new camera, both the Scarlet and the Epic, and the Scarlet is meant to be, you know, the small one, have 100 megabytes a second bandwidth. So this is three times the speed of data. So that really indicates this is like a completely second generation. This isn't like, you know, a repackaging of the existing sensors. And in fact, that is the case, because the new sensor that's going into the Epic is in fact a larger CMOS sensor, completely new technology. I guess it's built on the same Mysterium technology, but it's definitely a second generation technology. And that's going to much higher data rate, which is giving us 5K, 100 frames a second. But the camera is a lot more expensive. It's going to be around 40K.
Yeah, exactly.
And can't you trade in your existing Red at even money value?
That's absolutely true, yeah. If you have a Red One and you feel like, oh God, you know, I just bought this thing, you hand it back, they give you a full credit for what you paid for the body, because obviously the lenses are the same, and you get that off the...
That
was not mine.
I have to admit, if you use that as your ringtone, I'd be quite disappointed. So,
can I just say that we did agree that the first person that actually rang this, we would pay for the bar tab. So that was great. Thanks for appreciate that. So that's really interesting. But here's the thing: both the the Scarlett, which is a 3K camera, and the new one, which is 5K, are running at this much higher data rate. And yet the Scarlett camera is only $3,000.
Yeah, but I'm curious about the theoretical data rate and then actually the data rates that are going to be used, right? I mean, this stuff in the camera, and as usual with RED, they're very open about, hey, you know what, these specs are subject to change. As we develop the technology and work on it over the coming months, what's, you know, we can't etch this stuff in stone. But I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, is the quality of the 3K stuff going to be that much better? Less compression? I mean, who knows at this
point? Well, did you see what the Scarlett would run up to, the speeds that the Scarlett would actually run at?
I didn't see that.
120
frames a second, and in burst mode, 180 frames a second. 180 frames a second at 3K.
Interesting.
Pretty good.
Now, let's just be clear. There's now three RED cameras. Epic, the RED One, and Scarlett.
Yeah.
5K, 4K,
and 3K. Though, of course,
with a fixed lens on the 3K on the Scarlett.
Yeah, but in a 4K camera, you can run it at, like, you know, 2 or 3 or 4K. But
right,
yes.
Right.
That's
the
top level that they run
right.
at.
And not fixed lens. By that, I mean non-interchangeable lens on the Scarlett.
Non-interchangeable lens on Scarlett. Obviously, interchangeable lenses, PL mount on the RED One, as we already know. And that is continued into the Epic.
Yeah, and for those, if you want to get some of these tech details, red.com has good stuff. They have the full NAB brochure for download as well as fxguide.com.
And we actually got an interview coming up later. We're going to actually record later tonight with Ted. We've already spoken to Graham Natras for some of our classes in PhD, and so we'll be going through some of that stuff. But, I mean, I guess the thing is, like, I don't know, Mark, what do you reckon? It doesn't seem like it's long enough since the last one to be sort of putting them on their head. And also, you know, I walked over to Panasonic expecting some reaction in terms of product, and I just didn't see it.
Well, that's the game they're playing, right? I mean, it's interesting to me that RED is located in the lower South Hall, right?
Exactly right.
They're with all the post software companies. They're, right. You know, they play by their own rules. They're not up there with Sony and Panasonic. They're really aggressive. I mean, this give back your camera and get the upgrade thing, I can't imagine any other camera manufacturer doing anything like that. It's a bold, aggressive, you know, strike at the model, I think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there were some other things that they launched. I mean, a new LCD. There was a playback device for the RED code stuff. But, I mean, it was really hard to get past Scarlett and Epic on the show floor. And I certainly think that, you know, they're obviously going to be delivered not this year, beginning of next year.
Yep.
So, obviously, could slip, I guess. But
before the show, we were kind of speculating that the Scarlett was aimed at the HVX 200 market, kind of that market. Do we think that's still the case
now? I guess it is. I mean, I'd love it to have interchangeable stills lenses, but
it's aimed at the whole market of people who bought a RED thinking they weren't going to have to buy another $20,000 a gear to actually run it, you know.
Yeah.
They
actually
should offer a downgrade actually as well.
Yeah,
as
downgrade, yeah.
You can get a Scarlett in the accessories,
because here's the thing, the 18,500 for the RED One is only the part, you know, start of the problem, because the lenses, I mean, heck, we bought RED lenses, which are the cheapest PL mount, you know, we've got some Cook as well, but those lenses are twice the price of a Scarlett. So normally, you know, you get the camera, you still have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to finish out your kit. Scarlett, right. It's like...
But I guess my disappointment, I mean, not disappointment, but there was a lot of speculation before the show that it would be, you know, Canon and Nikon lens mount capable.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But the thought of being able to buy one of those or like a plasma display at the same price point, just myself.
That's true, because I was thinking the rumors were it might be around 5K, and then I was thinking, well, I'm going to probably have to buy some lenses.
The 3K price.
So I'm kind of happy.
But here's the thing, right? I went and sussed out how many, like, I thought, what's a good camera that's come out recently that we could look at in the broader sense, right?
Right.
I was trying to find out numbers on the Panasonic. I only found out numbers on the XD Cam. So XD Cam have sold 31,000 cameras, right? So think about this for a second. If RED hits numbers like that, 30,000 Scarlets or something, I'm not saying that number is just from me, not from anyone else, but that's just based on what Sony did. But it's not unrealistic. There could be thousands and thousands of these Scarlets out there. I mean, isn't that going to have a huge effect on post houses? Because, I mean, who isn't going to strap a couple of Scarlets on the side of a car for a car commercial and walk in with... You know, we had somebody here at Barcamp who quoted a job that they did, and I don't want to name names on this particular job because I don't know if I can, but I think they said there was, about 5 hours of material shot for six TVCs, right?
Well, and when you did the Red Center on that first one, Jason was talking about the job he shot with kids and how the freedom to let the camera roll. And I started thinking to myself, you know, that whole freedom to let the camera roll thing applies across the board, because once you do have that freedom and you're not worried about running out of film and you're not worried, you know, you obviously have a limited load, but
it's much bigger. $3,000, you're going to see those things shooting.
Yeah.
Man, we're not going to have raids big enough for that data.
Right. We need advice. If anybody out there is in the stock world, we need disk drive stock advice, because I think that's where the money needs to go.
You invest in disk drive. Yeah. So, okay. So, Jeff, did you see anything cool other than Red? I mean, it's kind of swamped the... Oh, sorry. Before we get on, there was one other thing. Color. Final Cut. Did you see that? Yeah.
I did not.
No, I didn't. I heard about it secondhand.
So they're going to have improved support for R3D files in Final Cut and Color, which has been kind of the, you know, it doesn't work so well, child of the Final Cut group, is now going to be able to natively read R3D format, which means that instead of having to go from Final Cut and say, well, I'm really happy here, I'm editing away, wait a second, I have to export everything to DPX just to move over to Color on my same laptop, now I can just keep color grading the R3Ds natively in color.
So how does that work? You're switching from the reference movie in Final Cut to the reference to the R3D and...
Look, I'll be honest with you. I have no freaking idea.
All right, cool.
Well, I wasn't being cagey earlier about not having all the details in the red, but one reason I had to duck out this morning so quickly is Ion gave us a really quick first look of anyone in the media at their new product generation.
I like those Ion guys.
And that's when Jeff and I went over there to check that out. So that's one reason I had to just duck out after getting all the information.
I was stuck. So tell me all about that, because I did not get there today.
Well, it's quite an interesting product. As you know, the Ion workflow and even the Shake workflow and Nuke workflow is kind of shot-based. Right. And one of the things that I'm sure you and I love about the Volume and Jeff as well is the idea of working shot base and batch and then having this timeline and, you know, swapping your shot in and be able to quickly view it. And basically what generation is, it's a way to keep track of all your individual shots. It's an editing UI from a starting point that really looks like almost a scratch type UI with the bins.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought the scratch was a good comparison.
Yeah, and I think
version,
we were talking about
version
that.
Stripes, horizontal, and then versions vertical.
So it's basically reading DPX files off the file system in real time and playing the back and that timeline, slipping shots, sliding them, has an audio track, and then you can stack versions on top of each other as you progress. Now, each of these shots is similar to kind of what we were talking about last night's podcast, batch effects. So these shots you can take then and easily take into Fusion, composite them, and then bring a comp back into your timeline. And manage rendering from there. You can attach clip notes.
The idea was that an artist could be working on a shot and a producer could put a note on it, or another artist could put a note on it. It shows up on the interface to the other person. And it also didn't have that scary, like, massive facility database feel to it. It's just text files, and it's not a Uber.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that is one of the drawbacks. You could take it in the Final Cut, you could take it in Premiere, whatever, when you're working on Fusion, take it in another workstation and look at it. So I thought it was actually pretty interesting. And the ability, they even went as far as having annotation, paint, and text, online chat even, so you can notify the other artists who are working on it. But the thing about it, of course, I asked the question, is it a database running in the background? And it's not. It's actually a simple... accessing the original set of file that's on a shared server.
For those of you that don't know, I think databases in these systems are the devil and the death of all systems. And I've said that to my dear friend who's been trying to sell me on databases pretty much since I've known him, sitting over in the corner over there. So I'm really glad to hear that. Hey, I think Ion's a good company because they've been around for a while, but this all sounds... Did you get a number on this, like price?
That is the interesting fact about it.
No price.
I didn't get a number either.
We have a guest.
We have a guest here who's coming.
Introduce yourself, please.
Terry Wester. So I got the demo as well, and one of the things that that I really liked about it was that you could click on it showed the picture, and you could click on it, and you could actually have multiple flows combined to one picture, so it would render one flow, then the other flow, then the other flow. It would keep them in order.
It would track the dependencies of a render. So, like, if you had a shot that fed another shot that fed another shot, it was smart enough to track that. Go and render the first shot, the second shot in order in your render queue. And it really is interesting. But, yeah, I think the pricing thing, I'm just dying because it's like I want to have an idea of what the pricing is.
Right.
It's like if it's
like, is it a site license? It'd be great. Is it a workstation?
But if it's $3,000, and it's like, well, you know.
I remember when they first came. I remember this story once about the history of Ford. They brought out the Mustang. They had a focus group on it. And they were walking around it. And I think I got these numbers right. And everyone was assuming that it was $5,000. So like, you know, I don't quite like the seat, and it's not quite right, and then maybe like this. And they went, oh, by the way, it's $3,000. And they went, I'm buying it. You know what I mean? It was like at some point, right, it's a big difference. And it shouldn't be, maybe, but it is. It's like if it's at a good price, then you can put it in the pipeline and use it.
Well, the other big thing they mentioned, too, was it's totally scriptable, interfaceable. You know, you can customize. If you have a system in your facility, that you can wind it into your facility really easily.
They're not forcing you to use a certain thing that they built, right? I mean, that's what's cool about it.
Well, there's that thing, isn't it? Like, if you're not an Autodesk or one of the A companies, then you almost have to be a sort of, I don't know, a good citizen in the facility. Otherwise, you're just not going to get into the pipeline, right? Because you can't dictate the terms of the environment.
Yeah, I think it's a 1.0 product. It's been in development. I talked to Steve Roberts, and it's been in development for about 2 years and really hardcore in a couple of facilities in Europe and very closed, tight beta for the last year that they've been using on a production. So I think it's a really interesting product, and especially applicable to our listeners and the type of people who are listening to this.
They didn't say it was going to be out this summer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They said they've been testing it in a facility pretty extensively.
Yeah.
Secret beta tester.
You do have to also love their name tags. Summer is different, right?
Sorry about that.
They're in June.
Okay,
July
of this year.
Yes, exactly.
That's close.
You do have to love the name tags on the Ion booth. They've had a tradition of funny names. The first guy I walked up to was Justin Timberlake,
and Steve Roberts was Le Grand Fromage. So
yeah. They must get a kick out of it. The NAB office.
So we saw Angie last night at the user group meeting, and Angie was appearing also on the DaVinci stand, and the DaVinci stand had Angie up showing some color grading stuff.
Yeah, see, I miss a lot of meetings at FSPhD, and I'm standing there with John. All of a sudden, I look over, and there's Angie. John, they've got Angie's footage over on the DaVinci booth. He goes, yeah, we did that. I'm like, oh, cool.
Which, you know, it's cool.
It's great. It's really nice. It's
4K, and it's really great to look at and see our footage up there, and it's great footage for them. But
it's perfect.
But so, Dave, joining us now. Dave, you had a look at the DaVinci stuff, right? Can you explain? Because it seems a little bit too good to be true that they were like quoting like what it seemed like absurd numbers on real-time performance.
Yeah, so DaVinci have just done a complete re-engineer of their rendering technology. So they've moved to the new NVIDIA CUDA-based GPU stuff. So this has given them a real hit in rendering performance, and they now have a 4K system that's doing 20 nodes, 20 layers, in real time.
So getting that right, we're talking 4K.
4K.
Uncompressed. So we happen to have shot Angie on R3D files, but I'm pretty sure they converted them right to DPX 4K, right?
Correct, they did.
Okay, so that's, and presumably, obviously, higher bit depth than 8-bit. So this is pretty much, you know, I'm going to put this, uncompromised 20 layers, right?
Uncompromised 10-bit DPX.
And second cell phone.
So that's the room service.
Next cell phone has to carry a backpack with ice and beer around the floor behind us tomorrow.
Oh, that's a good one. I can call somebody that's got their phone. But of course, Resolve ain't cheap, right?
No, Resolve isn't cheap, but there aren't many boxes that are moving 4K images around like that.
But 20 layers of color?
Yeah, 20, like defocus, secondaries. So every node is a primary, secondary, inside, outside window.
Picture manipulation.
But the really exciting thing, and they haven't been talking about this, but it was seen on the floor, is real-time zoom, pan, tilt, rotate in 4K. Now, that's a huge piece of engineering. Yeah.
Wow.
So put your hand on the knob, turn it around, and real-time 4K.
That is pretty impressive. That is impressive. I think the thing is that it shouldn't be jacking the price through the roof, because they're not building a lot of custom hardware, from what you're saying. They're kind of building on blocks. I mean, it's always been a really good engineering company, DaVinci, but...
Yeah, so they still have their custom transformer card, and that's the heart of the rotate stuff. So no one else can do that. That's why DaVinci can do that. But the GPU-based rendering was really impressive. So their entry-level machine now outperforms the fastest Resolve they've ever shipped.
Wow. And Resolve wasn't that crappy to start with. Hey, and also, as you know, I'm like a bit of a LUT freak, and I overheard someone talking... Hey, shut up, Dags. I heard
especially someone, 3D LUTs, though.
I love 3D LUTs, yes, yeah. Okay, it's certifiable okay, geek now. Anyway, I heard someone over talking in the Starbucks queue about DaVinci and 3D LUTs, so can you explain that?
Sure. So there's a great new feature in Resolve for generating 3D LUTs. So you can take an image, do anything you can do to it in Resolve, grade it, move it in any way in color space, and at the click of a button, you can generate a 3D LUT, which is exportable in the Resolve system to use as your base for a project. And even more exciting, you can do that with any video path inside the facility. So anything that you can put into Resolve as a video path, you can generate a LUT for.
And you can export the LUTs for Flame and whatever
yeah.
you want?
So it's an open 3D LUT that can be taken into a CineTel monitor or whatever.
You know, and CineTel bought CineSpace, which I thought was amazing from Rising Sun. Right, but I was going to say, because that's just got 3D LUTs in the monitor, makes sense. Hey, I was going to ask you, the other thing that I was wondering about in that score, does that play into any kind of on-set evaluation of electronic? Because the big thing seems to be getting really accurate monitoring on set, whereas we used to just put up with crap on the video split and know it was crap. Is any of that sort of 3D LUT stuff relevant there?
Oh, I'm just mentioning the CineTel, so that would be one path where you could take that look and have it on set and know
and that LUT would be coming from your DaVinci, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
They'd see the same thing. Okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. Well, I'm gonna thank you for that, Dave, and I'm gonna talk about some cute little stuff that I saw on the floor. One of them was this is really dorky, right? But Jimmy was filming today, and his wrist was like caving in from me having to do 15
cool.
takes, right?
Yeah,
I just kept on doing take after take after take because I kept on fluffing my lines, right? Which is unusual for me because I wasn't drunk. Anyway, so the point was that I saw this thing from Hoodman. Did you see it, Jeff?
Yeah, it was great. It was some
simplest idea
something.
Ever. It was like a strap-on wrist thing, right? What?
It's funny. Spit beer out on the table.
Okay. Anyway, so what it was, imagine that you had like basically a tripod mount built into your wrist brace.
Like a wrist brace, yeah.
So
like
instead of just getting there like kind of, and yeah, so this thing basically holds your camera steady and helps you just not tire out. You know, I thought it was cool.
You're tired to drop your arm, the camera's secure. It
wasn't much money.
Yeah.
Seems pretty cool. I love those like little finds you get around the booth of just somebody that's come up with a good idea for a few $100.
They had a bunch of show specials for stills cameras, like an angled viewfinder.
And those light panels.
Oh, what was
the
that
little,
booth?
Little light panels at the...
LED light panels for like putting on top of the camera.
It's probably called light
They had
panels.
Like 1 foot by 1 foot ones with a 2 hour battery. They were really nice illumination, bright.
So they actually showed a studio, didn't they? That set up their entire... Actually a major TV LEDs. Studio, like a...
LED lighting. Yeah. I've said it for... You know, a little while now, I reckon KinoFlows, as brilliant as they are, over the next 5 or 7 years, will get completely phased out with LEDs. LEDs are the way to go. Constant light, cold, don't...
Low consumption.
Battery-powered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For hours.
Just so cool.
I mean, put a couple, you know...
But in terms of big announcements, John...
Yeah, I think we've been covering on Effects Guide, and since probably, 3 weeks ago, we had a podcast interview with Alan Jenneke from Imagineer Systems about their new announcements about Mogul. And today, Patrick O'Casey, who, let's just point out that he won the HP 8600 dual quad core.
He's
this
also
is the guy we talked about.
He's also
year.
Taking us out for dinner after this, yeah.
Yeah, take us out to dinner.
And the 30-inch monitor.
And the 30-inch
but
monitor.
But the most important thing is, while wearing an FX PhD t-shirt.
Yeah.
That was good. Let's hear it, Patrick.
Thank you. Thank you.
Become a good friend, so it's really great to see him
nothing
win that.
Nothing if not publicity slots. So.
But you dropped by the Imagineer folks to get the scoop, didn't you?
I did, and it was interesting, if nothing else, I suppose. They are shipping just... Mogul is this modular, complete system for everything in a facility, basically, and it's scalable and so on. And the only thing they're shipping right now is their review station. Which
meaning playback?
Yeah, playback and commenting and it was a pretty good review system. It had good reviewing
sorry,
tools.
Sorry, George, I just need you to be way closer to the mic.
Okay, sorry.
Otherwise, we're going to miss out on your whole system.
No, right. It had good review tools. It definitely did. It had good A-Bing. It had soft import type stuff.
Hmm.
which seemed to work pretty well, mm-hmm. I thought. And it was a good reviewing system overall, but it was pricey. And they're running the subscription model, right? So you mm-hmm. can't buy their products. You can only do a subscription to them, a minimum of 6 months for the more expensive ones. And this was, you got the software and you got an HP workstation, no storage. And that was $3,000 a month.
A month?
A month. Which
you own, you own nothing.
Oh, you no, nothing.
Okay. So minimum
except
of,
the right
so
to pay.
So unless maths is like escaping me tonight, and it quite will be, right? We're talking like $18,000 minimum, yeah? Because you've got 6 months, right?
Yep.
So, and at the end of your $18,000, you don't have anything necessarily. I mean, you could keep paying for it, right?
Yep.
I mean,
that's the one.
Yeah. We should talk about the subscription.
And
the description.
I thing is, they that say that pricey. It's that their idea, their philosophy is scalable, so that you be able to come in on the low end and pay little and then scale up and then scale down. But if an entry review system is $3,000 a month, I can't have it in my facility, put it like that. But yeah. that's the only thing they're shipping. And they were talking about lots of other products, obviously. The big Master Station, which had everything. It had editing, grading, and so on.
What did they show you?
Smoke, they showed us nothing. They said that they only wanted to show stuff that they could ship.
I mean, we talked to Alan, and he kind of laid out the timeline, so we kind of didn't expect to see anything.
No, that's
but,
true.
But if the other one's $3,000, how much is this one?
It was $5,000, he said.
But that has, what, a gig or two of
It has 1.6 terabytes of storage. It could do, he said, up to two streams of 2K, which means 1.5, maybe, I guess. And it seemed really nifty, and they've tied it all together with their mogul server thing, which looks really good. I mean, it looks. I mean, I didn't see anything of it, but what he talked about mm-hmm. sounded really cool. It's just that I can't see that you would pay $5,000 a month for something that is untested.
Well, I mean, I guess my thought is if they get it all together,
yeah,
the timeline's finished, mm-hmm. and it's like, whoa, this thing's amazing. Then the idea of a subscription for a facility which has multiple seats and gets a job and wants to grow, shrink, it could be a very wonderful thing.
I'm for subscription when it's built on the base of something. Like, I don't mind it if you kind of buy it and then you've got an option to stay yeah. current kind of thing.
It's a good part. I mean, it could be a valid part of a business model to have subscription yeah. as well as you could buy it. But
yeah. I like the idea of buying tools also for limited times. That ability kind of thing with the subscription. You know, you have
like
a big job ramp
the
up for a couple months on something, buy a bunch of extra roto stations that they would have.
Right, but you'd want yeah. that yeah. like on 24 hours on a website, right? You wouldn't be like,
no, yeah, exactly.
I need to roto this tonight. Well, we can't get to office hours. Yeah. Yeah, call back in.
Thing is, I mean, it's they've done a lot of thinking, obviously. I mean, they're inviting sort of third-party applications to exist in their environment.
Who are they inviting?
Everybody, I guess. Yeah. You know, okay. It's open for everybody to be part of the workflow. You don't get all the nifty features that come through the server products. But, you know, they're keeping it fairly open, and they're running OpenFX, which is nice, you know. And they've got the database for the server open to PostgreSQL and Python, and the master station could all be scripted with Python, and it all sounds nice. And then there was the development by committee thing, which was both scary and interesting, I thought. They're going to have this thing where they develop for 2 weeks, and then they review what they developed, and then they invite all their users to, you know, request things, and then they develop for another 2 weeks, which... It sounds, you know, it sounds fun if they can be if they can be that responsive.
As long as there's a good gatekeeper on
yeah,
their side,
exactly.
I think, you know,
if they have a good voting system or something for the features. If it's just, you know, people coming in and asking,
I
would even say that it's not good to always go with the majority.
That's what I was
gonna say. I would say,
I
you
want
know,
a
because
genius who like tells me what I don't know even know I want yet.
But you, by gatekeeper, yeah. I mean someone who ingests that, takes it and massages, say, you know what, that doesn't fit our idea of the product, mm-hmm. doesn't fit our UI. Because I mean, I actually have a tremendous amount of respect for Al and Jenny. I mean, they have really good base technology that they've developed in their products.
I've made lots of money in
their
products.
Some of the guys who've moved over to help them with the product development. And I'd like to see them succeed, but I think it's a big hill to climb.
It's a long list of features they're talking about that, you know, I've seen lots of people try to attempt the big list of features like mm-hmm. that and go, oh, we're going to kill Flame, for example.
Yeah,
it's a tough list.
It's just such an enormous task.
I know.
Do I have to have every press release with this is a X killer? But anyway, sorry.
They're saying that they will upgrade your software and hardware all the time. And,
You don't necessarily want that, though. I mean,
no.
Feature lock on a feature.
Exactly.
You don't want to change anything.
And but they said that one of the reasons that they wanted to do this was so that they didn't have to support legacy hardware and legacy software, right?
But hang on, we got one person that doesn't want to update their gear and they're supporting legacy, right?
Exactly. So, and it's a huge logistical undertaking to do this. It's just fucking enormous. And I don't know, it seems like their entire business model stands and falls on big assumptions on how people work. And I've never seen that, you know. I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If you are one of the A companies, maybe.
I would say they are early enough in the process to take some of this feedback they're getting probably and adjust what they're saying. But I think your point about upgrading is a really good one. I mean, I know people who haven't upgraded to Flame 2008 who are on subscription in 2007, and 9's coming out now.
Yeah.
You know, so just because you're in the middle of a job, you don't want to be doing that.
No, as long as it works, you know.
Yeah.
But you still want to get bug fixes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I'm not sure. I mean, it could be interesting. It's always good with a bit of competition.
Hey, we don't wish them.
Like
we don't
we embrace
them
at all.
No, just, not at all. I mean, it would be really cool if they could compete, but I can't see it happening right now.
Well, it's interesting business.
Hang on
time
a second.
Too.
We've got a bit of an emergency here. We run out of beer.
No, we have not. Is the blue case been tapped? The cooler on the left side.
Okay, just everyone calm down.
On the bottom left.
God for that.
It's all right. Go to the reserve supply.
Gary Davis.
Okay, good.
Beer crisis solved.
Gary Davis, who just got here, was in tears.
There's at least another 10 minutes of beer in that case.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wow. Beer has been delivered. Wait, we need an opener, though.
So,
I like NAB podcasts. It's much better than me sitting in my house, you know, and on a Skype thing or something like that.
So we're going to continue. I think we should discuss disk drives, right?
I think so, too.
Because I saw you just go completely girly today over a disk drive, which is the first time I've actually seen you do that.
I think I actually wet myself.
You literally did. We were walking toward this...
I'm trying to be all hip and like, oh, how's the Coney being sold? And I press and you're like, oh, look at this.
We're walking toward the GTEC booth and John catches out of the corner of his eye the words FireWire... RAID 5.
I actually did.
And I saw
because
him just run.
I've been looking actually for a solution like this because I'm kind of frustrated with the built-in RAID building on Macintosh with FireWire drives because it's software RAID, it's RAID 0 or 1. Become a big fan of RAID 5 with enclosures. And so GTEC is coming out with a RAID Pro coming out this summer, a.k.a. June. And it's, first of all, you know, their stuff looks cool.
Gorgeous.
I mean, from the single
and
drives
small.
To the mini RAIDs, it's small. It's beautiful stuff. But it's a four-drive RAID system with a hardware controller that can do RAID 0 or 5. And it has these inputs, FireWire 400, FireWire 800, USB, and SATA. You got the bases covered with that. It's just perfect. Once again, no pricing, but... Quite frankly, I don't give a damn what they're going to
They're pretty reasonable on the price.
Yeah, I think so, too. They're not like jacking up the prices of the hard drive.
My big complaint has always been, you know, the first rule of drinking is you don't drunk dial. The second is you don't email. The third is you don't blog. And you don't go to any website that has an order now button. And the number of times I've gone to the GTEC website and tried to order something.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of the night and gone. And they had nothing in stock. But I understand they've been bought, right?
Well, yeah, they had been bought, though I didn't get much more after them because we were distracted by the drives. But the reason you want RAID 5, right, is drives do die.
Yeah, we know that. I mean, I came back with all our footage from Australia that I carried craftily back with me from my trip to Australia, and basically the drive failed. And I actually think I was on the IRC channel at FXBHD, and people were helping me with that. All the tech gurus and sysadmin folks in Europe were helping me with that. But again, this idea, there are data recovery services that do that.
Well, actually, the one thing about having a backup is kind of a good idea to not store the backup where the primary is, because...
Wow. We have a guest. Please introduce yourself.
How you doing? I'm Will Higgins.
So, Will, you were telling us that... you got to tell that story about the guy who didn't want piracy.
Okay, well, somewhere east of the red booth on the NAB floor, there's a organization called Drive Savers. So when you walk into their area, they have a smoldered case of a PC sitting on a little platform. So when you ask the people, why do you people display this burned up piece of equipment here? And they say, well, what they do is, since they do data recovery, some people said, we have this drive and we had the backups. Unfortunately, the backups and the PC were in the same location when our office burned down, so we ended up with absolutely nothing at all.
And genius.
It gets better. Wait for this. Keep going.
And basically, out of that, talking to the people down there on the floor, they said, yes, we were able to take this very case, take the drives out, and extract the data. Because what they have is a facility that's very similar to one that you'd actually do your manufacturing in. They've got clean rooms, and they've got people that have a great deal of expertise in disassembling these drives and replacing whichever component is best.
It's like CSI, right? It's like forensic.
CSI for dead drives, yes.
Okay. Wow. So, I love it already.
So anyway, when I'm talking to these folks, they say, well, what type of other things do you do? They say, well, you know, we do backups for iPhones. And I'm thinking, if I have an iPhone and I plug it in, I would figure I'd have a backup for that. But anyway, they also do data recovery for different organizations. So they were saying that a major film organization had a drive. Because they were concerned with piracy, they only had one copy of the drive. And that part of their workflow worked good. They only had one private copy, so they were able to maintain absolute control over it. Unfortunately, this thing died, at which point they were pretty much stuck. But the Drive Savers people were able to recover the data from that particular drive. So I'd say of course, you listen to these guys, it's like, wow, that's great. I wonder how much this costs. But it comes down to a question. You know, you can go out and buy a FireWire drive for less than $200, 500 gigabytes. Now, if that thing has a project that you've been working on 6 months and that's the only copy, what are you willing to pay to get that back?
Oh, I would pay a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would pay a lot.
Exactly.
We had one of the drives from John and I had been editing the VES stuff, and I had dropped two drives. And, you know, we all had all the footage backed up in Chicago, but, you know, I lost 2 days.
Yeah.
Redoing it all.
Yeah, and I don't suggest putting the drive in the freezer, which is what Ripclaw suggested me on the IRC channel.
He's taking the piss, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time.
Okay.
But anyway, so we've got this big meetup here for BarCamp with FXPhD members and so forth that we've got, and that's our studio audience, if you would, today.
Say hello again, studio audience.
Hello!
They're drunker than they were.
We are, of course, it's our first week of the new term over at FXPhD, so pretty excited about that.
Has anyone not got their name in the hat for the iPod? Yeah, here we go.
So anyone who's coming to light, who is a member and not a prof, Gary.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry. So what we're doing is we're just giving away a nice iPod Red Nano.
As in,
because we like the contribution.
Right?
Yeah, we like the idea because, of course, you know, I joined the Red organization.
Oh, it's a product Red iPod. Yes, it is.
So,
yes.
Drawing the.
So, we're going to have Angie do it, but she's busy with the Da Vinci book.
So, yeah. So,
so the next most beautiful person here is Jimmy. No. I mean, that's in a totally friendly kind of Aussie way.
Yes. Yeah. So, Jimmy, why don't we go ahead and do the honors and have you draw for the winner the iPod Nano? I can't. Oh, you know, we had the drumsticks over there. That's what they were here for. And the winner is Robert Martin. Come and collect.
Hey, the best dressed man at the podcast.
So congratulations. And thanks all you guys for being here and helping contribute, because a lot of these ideas and stuff we've been talking about have obviously come from the BarCamp discussion.
I was just saying. Yeah, no, it's been really great. And it's always great at BarCamp, actually, because, you know what I mean? It's the community that both we have on FX Guide and on PhD that makes, like, just such a difference. In fact, we've often joked that we just like hanging out with these guys, right? So we get to do it for real here.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a lot of fun, so thanks for hanging out.
Okay. Last year we ran out of beer, but we fixed that this year.
Oh, did we fix it ever? Jeff didn't go to the Red Bull, so he could go to the liquor store, which luckily are like 24/7 in this city.
Yes, and the slot machines in the grocery store are amusing it at 8:30 in the morning, I will say.
Oh, you got to tell... I have to tell the clown story.
All right. Mike and I decided to go to the local grocery store the other morning and pick up some more supplies, water, you know, muffins and stuff, because we're at the Wynn Hotel, which is a lovely hotel, but... air costs money here. So we went out to a local grocery store. And as we pulled in the parking lot, I turned to Mike and I just said, you know, off the top of my head. Yeah, I said, you know, they're probably not used to seeing clowns like us in here. This will be kind of fun. So we go walking to the front. And Mike says, well, this is Vegas. There's probably actual clowns here. We literally park the car, get out, start walking toward the door, and two clowns come out to the front door of the grocery store walking toward us. Big shoes, floppy pants, everything but face makeup. Yeah. We were speechless. We just stood there like,
My God. That could not happen.
Mind you, we walked inside. It was Meech's again at 9 o'clock in the morning. There are all these shopping carts lined up and people on the poker machines in the Vons.
A little walled-off little area with the slot machines. Like, you know, if you're gambling at
9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, you're probably...
Yeah.
It's official. You have a problem. Okay, well, that's been great. I want to thank you guys, as we said, and that's it for day one at NAB.
Monday.
This NAB FX podcast is brought to you by GenArts, creators of Sapphire plugins, the essential VFX toolkit for digital artists. Visit www.genarts.com to learn about the latest release for Apple's FX plug products.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.